Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. And we are going to start the show today by talking with you about tick-borne illnesses. According to the Center for Disease Control, those illnesses have risen to over 300,000 new cases per year. And, you know, sometimes you want to rank very highly in ratings, but here's one where we probably don't want to rank so high. We're fourth in the country in terms of new cases of tick-borne illnesses each year. Well, we're going to try and do something about that. Our guest today is Dr. Andreas Kogelnick. He is the director of the Open Medicine Institute and is a scientific advisory board member for the Global Lyme Alliance and a national expert on tick-borne illnesses. And he's helping to establish the Tick-Borne Illness Center of Excellence with Howard Young Medical Center in Woodruff, Wisconsin. So it'll be a regional resource for clinical treatment and research. So we'll talk with him about the center and what research is being done to help prevent and treat tick-borne illnesses, and certainly want you to join in as you listen in here. What would you like to know about diseases caused by ticks? Maybe you've had problems getting a diagnosis. You can join in the conversation. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Andy Kogelnick, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you, Larry. It's a pleasure to be here.
How did tick-borne illnesses become your specialty?
Well, I've been looking at a lot of sort of different cases, sort of case unknowns for a long time, and there's a lot of mysteries still to be unraveled in the tick-borne illness arena, and a lot of these are chronic illnesses, so it just seemed like a natural fit as we were looking at trying to unravel some of these mysteries.
Why are we seeing such a rise in cases in this country and in Wisconsin?
Well, there probably have always been a higher number of cases than have been reported. The reporting system is sort of reliant on the public health system and physicians to report these, and in most states, these are not reportable illnesses, so it's sort of voluntary reporting. And indeed, even in Wisconsin, we've had conversations with the public health folks who are just under-resourced to capture the huge number of cases there, and so your number at number four is probably actually an underestimate. That it's actually probably much higher, is my guess.
No. So what are the main diseases that are related to tick bites?
Well, Lyme disease is probably the most common one that people have heard of, and indeed is the highest on the list. But there are others, including things like Anaplasma, Babesia. Powassan virus is one that's come up in your region quite a bit of late and is being looked at. But there's bacteria, there's parasites, and even viruses. So it's an array of stuff, and maybe things that we don't fully understand and measure yet that these ticks are carrying around.
And it seems to be, at least in some cases, it's difficult to diagnose these diseases.
Yeah, I mean the acute presentation can be very revealing. I mean, there's a very characteristic bullseye rash, but that rash for Lyme disease, and I'm talking about now, but that rash doesn't happen in everyone. And so, if you get sort of the hot button pressed and get a diagnosis early, that's great. But there's a lot of people who are missed or are misdiagnosed, and some of those people, even in the acute form, go on to become chronic cases or post-treatment Lyme disease syndrome, as the Johns Hopkins folks have coined this term. And that is part of the problem, is that the case definition for Lyme disease is still a clinical one. So it really means it's up to doctors to decide what is a case and what isn't. The testing side of this is a mess.
So we've got the Tick-Borne Illness Center of Excellence in Woodruff, Wisconsin. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so the Howard Young Foundation approached us just about a year ago to start a conversation about tick-borne illnesses up there in northern Wisconsin in particular, And we were really excited to start to be able to work with them as the conversation developed, because what they really were after was not just placing a clinical resource there for patients who are suffering from these illnesses, but also to make that data-driven and bring research back into the middle of that so we can understand these better and really help patients figure out a path back to health. And really get these the need addressed. And so we're really trying to see the center as a place where both research and clinical efforts can be driven, and really get behind the patient population, but also, you know, bring these different sides of the discussion in Lyme disease and other illnesses together. There's a lot of polarized groups that believe in one thing or another, and we really want the center to be a place that uses data to help answer some of the questions and the controversies between these groups.
So people are going to be able to go to the center for treatment?
That's right. So we'll be leasing some space in the Howard Young Medical Center. So we'll be an independent entity there. We'll have a clinic set up so people can come in and see providers and get clinical care. And at the same time, we'll have a research team that will be looking not only at the patients, but a little bit more broadly at the region and the bugs themselves and so forth and the testing methods and trying to understand both from a clinical perspective what works in terms of treatment, but also helping to hack at that question of better diagnostics and how do we define these cases better.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool that the center ended up in Wisconsin.
Well, it's really, to me, we're so lucky to be there. I mean, the foundation has been incredible in its support, but really just the whole community, and I keep saying it to the foundation, I can't believe, you know, what a wonderful community we've dropped into, and it really is going to take a community effort to solve a lot of these problems. We did a small screening last year at the Dragon Boat Festival, and, you know, I figured we'd be lucky if we got, you know, 20, 30 people to show up and get their blood drawn. And we had a line out of the tent before we even opened, and we ran out of supplies after about 100 people. So it was really a testament to the community, and that involvement has really continued over the last 9 months as we've kind of gotten this off the ground. So the need is huge, and we're happy to be there.
We have a number of callers online to ask questions and make some comments, but just what will the patient's experience be like at the center?
Well, we really want it to be a landing pad of sort of openness and understanding. A lot of these patients are sidelined because these definitions aren't great, and there's a lot of misdiagnosis out there, and physicians don't have a lot of time to deal with complex cases. You know, the acute ones perhaps get dealt with well by providers out there, but sometimes the more complicated ones are a little bit harder to diagnose. We want the center to be a place where they can come and tell their story and have perhaps a little bit more time to do that with a provider and set a course for correcting whatever else may be going on that is keeping them from getting back to health. But really want it to be a place that's welcome to lots of ideas, both on the diagnosis side as well as, you know, standard treatments, as well as perhaps some things that are a little bit considered non-standard. But we really want to, again, put data behind those and really demonstrate what works and what doesn't work for any given individual.
Let's take some calls. Alicia in Spring Green, we'll give you a chance. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to talk about an experience that I had. In 2012, I found a tick on my head, and it was just a regular dog tick. And I ended up, after about 2 weeks, I completely lost my appetite, and I was really sick. And I'm not the sort of person who doesn't like to eat.
No.
So my friend at work said, you have to go to the doctor. And they just gave me doxycycline, and I got over it. But I always wondered what the heck, because I lost, like, a lot of weight in a couple of weeks. Mm. It was really scary.
So the standard wood tick created all those, may have created all that problem, Dr. Kogelnick.
Yeah, I mean, at least I think your story really is kind of classic. You know, I mean, it sounds like you had an acute episode of something, and whether it was Lyme or something else, a lot of these syndromes overlap, both in the terms of the symptoms and some of the treatments. So I'm glad that you were able to recover, but it really just demonstrates that they really can affect so many different systems in our bodies, and that is part of what makes them hard to diagnose. So I'm glad you had a quick recovery, and that's what we want for everybody. But sadly, that's not always what happens all the time.
Definitely
a good thing that went right for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Alicia, thank you. Karen in Middleton will give you a chance now. Hi, Karen.
Hi. My husband has had a condition for almost 10 years that it doesn't get any worse. It doesn't get any better. He's seen many different types of doctors, but it at least resembles what you would call anxiety attacks. But he's on such a schedule of them. It's like 2 weeks, and then the first day won't be too bad, and then it builds up over about 3 or 4 days, and it peaks at 4 days, and then gradually diminishes. And then a couple weeks later, he goes through this again. I mean, it seems very metabolic somehow. And I'm wondering, does that sound like anything that could possibly, I mean, we've ruled out any, you know, brain tumors and horrible things, but does that sound like anything that could be related to Lyme? He spends a great deal of time outdoors.
Yeah, well, we don't typically think of Lyme as cyclical in terms of once it's in the body. There definitely can be waxing and waning of symptoms. But I will say in general, there's a lot going on looking at how these different bugs affect the microbiome in the gut, so the bacteria that are in the gut. And there's been lots of ties of the microbiome to, as you mentioned, our metabolic system, but also to sort of how that impacts the brain and our mental health and both anxiety-related and depression-related illnesses. So there may very well be a connect there. Sounds like, you know, with a little more information, we could take a little bit of a deeper dive on that.
Yeah. Karen, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Joel in Westby, your turn now. Hi, Joel.
Hello. I had been bitten by a tick about 3-4 weeks ago, and I found the tick, and it hadn't been embedded, but about a week afterwards, I got to where I was just all wore out, tired, muscle ache, and everything else. So I called my doctor, and his nurse said that they probably will just prescribe tetracycline, but they decided that best to take a blood sample and make sure it was Lyme's. And when they did that, they found out that it wasn't Lyme's. But then when I got the bill for the blood work, it was $839. And I was wondering, ouch, if that the norm, or was it overcharged?
Yeah. So first off, let me say that a negative test isn't necessarily always an answer. You know, the sensitivity for these tests are not great. They're very specific. So a positive test is very helpful often, but it's easy to miss a case with the test. And as I mentioned a moment ago, you know, Lyme disease is still what we call a clinical diagnosis. So there is no perfect lab test for this. But yeah, as to the cost, I have seen Lyme tests go up that high. Depends on the lab you send it to, really, as to exactly what tests they were running and what they'll charge for that. So it really depends on where you sent it. But yeah, one of the things we're looking at is how we can help to bring some of those costs down and reduce the cost of testing as a whole, but obviously also improve the accuracy of that testing.
Yeah. Thank you very much for calling, Joel. Our guest today, Dr. Andy Kogelnik, is the director of the Open Medicine Institute, a scientific advisory board member for the Global Lyme Alliance, and he is helping establish the Tick-Borne Illness Center of Excellence in Woodruff, Wisconsin. So great possibilities here, and it's great to have him with us. I'm Larry Mueller. Nigel O'Shea, our engineer today, Jill Nadeau, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Talking today with Dr. Andy Kogelnik, who is helping to establish the Tick-Borne Illness Center of Excellence in Woodruff, Wisconsin. Talking with him about the center and about diseases, illnesses relating to tick bites. Great to have him along. Our lines are all filled. We've got some emails as well. Leanne in Princeton wondered if it's possible for a pregnant woman to pass Lyme disease to her baby.
Yeah, congenital Lyme has been documented before, so that is definitely possible. Thankfully, it's not very common, but it's definitely in the realm of possibility.
Joan in Baraboo, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Joan.
Hi. Mike, I have two questions. One is, at one point we had a doctor that gave us doxycycline prescription in the understanding that when we got bit by a tick, we could take that as a prophylactic when we found the tick. Is that a common practice?
It is, but it is not necessarily optimal in the sense that the antibiotics have side effects too. So you don't want to just be taking antibiotics willy-nilly, but they definitely have a great role in terms of treating Lyme disease directly. So I would say that if you're just trying to prevent a case, it's much better to gown up, and so to speak, in terms of tucking loose clothing in, not giving the ticks a place to attach, and really do your tick checks when you're coming in from outside. But yeah, bites do happen, so obviously we want to do as much as we can to prevent those.
Yeah, thanks, Joan. Doug in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Doug.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My question is, back in the early 1990s, I had a vaccine for Lyme disease, and I've had a couple of boosters for that, probably a year spaced apart. So the original vaccine and then two boosters. And then I was told that the vaccine was taken off the market, and the doctor didn't know anything about why. And I was told I would always test positive for Lyme disease. I don't have any particular symptoms, although I've had some bizarre health things happen. I'm wondering if your guest knows anything about this vaccine and the history and why it was removed from the market and is it effective and et cetera.
All right. Thanks, Doug.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of controversy. Thanks for the question, Doug. Around that vaccine when it came out, it was pulled from the market, and part of that was around potential side effects. But I think it was in some ways a shame because it some of similar vaccines are still given in Europe. But we don't really have a substitute for it at the moment. Unfortunately, no one has stepped up and to try to develop a new vaccine. But there are the assertion that you will always test positive is correct because most of the tests that are out there test a specific protein that was present in that vaccine. So you will test positive.
And it was taken off because it just hadn't been tested enough, or what?
No, it had gone through relatively extensive testing, but there was some backlash there's a lot going on, obviously, in the vaccine field, and there's sort of this, whole camp of vaccinators versus anti-vaccinators. And so I think a little bit of that controversy got mired up in there. But really, at the end of the day, it was moderately effective, but the cost versus the screening was part of the issue. And I think the company didn't really want to get into the controversy too much. They viewed it as a little bit of a challenge in terms of the marketing and the use of the vaccine as well. So yeah, that played into it as well.
I gotcha. Diane in Sparta, your turn. Hi, Diane.
Hi. In the past, my husband has been diagnosed with both Lyme disease and anaplasmosis at different times. And I'm just wondering, will he always test positive for those? Do the antibodies stay in the system all the time?
Yeah, typically when your body sees something foreign, it will develop an antibody to it within 2 weeks. And usually that's your high peak, and that usually goes down very slowly over time. So typically, yeah, you could test positive for it for a decade, sometimes even two, and it really depends on your immune system and how it's functioning. But forever is possible, so to speak, in terms of lifespan. But typically your immunity will go down. And the question is how close to the limit of detection on that particular test are you going to go as to whether you'll always test positive. But yeah, you would expect that if you got re-exposed, you'd have a boost to that, you know, when at the time of re-exposure. But yeah, you would always test positive for the antibody test. Again, there's lots of different kinds of tests out there. Some of them test the immune system, like the antibodies. Some of them test for the actual bug itself in the tick or in the person.
Thank you, Diane, for calling. Let's go to Gary in Wausau next. Hi, Gary. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I'm a retired physician who was actually practicing in the Minocqua area 7 years ago when I encountered this fascinating lady. She was an elderly lady from the Milwaukee area vacationing in up there. She was seen by us for a infection which required IV antibiotics over the course of several days. But she recounted that she'd been hospitalized 6 times in the Milwaukee area at a tertiary medical center, seen multiple physicians over the years. She came in with a cane with severe arthritis and pretty debilitated. And after 3 days of the IV antibiotics, I believe it was Rocephin, she comes in one morning and says, Doctor, do you notice anything different? I said, yeah, you don't have your, where's your cane? And she said, I have no arthritis today. And I asked, so had you seen Lyme specialists and whatnot? And she says, at least a half a dozen of them.
Oh. Well, that's a kind of a, well, it's a happy ending, but a kind of a sad story in a way, Dr. Kogelnick.
Yeah, and, you know, unfortunately, we see a lot of that, you know, fortunately in terms of those that recover, but there's also a lot of stories like that where things linger on for a long time and don't seem to have a clear path, and those are the kinds of cases that we need to dig into a little bit deeper and try and figure out what's going on. Sometimes it's you know, persistence of the bug, which has been shown in the lab. Sometimes it's just sort of post-treatment issues. And so there's a lot to be sorted through there, and we hope to put some good science to use in addressing cases exactly like that.
Some others were wondering about the Tick-Borne Illness Center of Excellence in Woodruff. Is it up and running and so forth?
Well, we're just taking a hold of our lease in July here and doing some construction, so we hope to be up later this summer. But we'll actually start opening with the research efforts later this month, and we'll hopefully have some news on terms of dates as to when we actually start seeing patients relatively shortly. But we're hoping, you know, August, September kind of timeline.
And people who are interested in and maybe seeing you, or I should say going to the center, is there a website up or?
Yeah, we have a phone number and there is an email address, which is tics@openmedicineinstitute.org. And happy to take emails or phone calls. And we have a waiting list that's already been developing and is filling up fast. And we're excited to be getting the doors open.
And I know the phone number is 715-203-1616. So 715-203-1616. And you're still doing some fundraising as well, right?
Well, the foundation is the Howard Young Foundation is raising funds for half the center for 3 years. And we hope that within those 3 years, we can make it a self-sufficient center going forward. But yeah, there's an active campaign around that. So the Howard Young Foundation in Minocqua.
All right, let's take some more calls. Amy in Waupun, it's your turn. Hi, Amy.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My concern is I have gone to my doctor with what I consider to be symptoms of possibly something from a tick bite. I spend a lot of time in the woods, and I have had numerous tick bites, but never had the classic bullseye rash. But I have had a lot of dermatitis, joint problems, and now the latest thing is heart arrhythmias. And my doctor, my concern is the doctor acts like I'm ridiculous, that why would you want to get tested for Lyme's disease? Or, you know, and I think that sounds pretty reasonable that I would, but I wonder if all doctors are hesitant to check you.
Yeah, I mean, thanks. A great question. And I think it really reflects a lot of the controversy in the field and even among physicians. And that's part of what we want to do with the center is really be an education resource, not only for patients, but also for my physician colleagues. There's a lot that's unknown. There's a lot of new work in the field. And, you know, when I went to medical school, Lyme was looked at and other tick-borne illnesses very differently because it wasn't real. I mean, in terms of what was in the textbooks, you have to remember that Lyme in particular is a relatively young disease. We only discovered it in the 1990s. And so it's still somewhat controversial in terms of if it's not an acute case, what is it? But we're learning a lot more about sort of all the immune and molecular derangements that can happen in the body around Lyme and other illnesses every day. And so part of what we need to do is get out there and educate our physicians better as to what's currently known. But I'd also refer you to Dr. Neil Spector, who's a professor at Duke University in North Carolina, who also has a story that sounds like it's a little bit similar to yours, where he had kind of these strange symptoms, and then ultimately he had some heart issues. And he wound up having been a missed case of Lyme disease and ultimately got diagnosed and ultimately got treated with IV antibiotics. But unfortunately for him, at that point, he was in complete heart failure. And he wound up getting a heart transplant, which he survived and wrote a book about. I think it's called Gone in a Heartbeat. If you want to look it up, I'm sure it's on Amazon and so forth. But, you know, just an amazing story. And here's a physician who, you know, was misdiagnosed and had some of the same kinds of symptoms that you're describing. So I definitely think, you know, it's worth another look and come to us or someone else who understands the latest and greatest in the field and happy to try and help you figure that out.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Kathy emailed to say her teenage daughter was diagnosed with Lyme disease in April of 2017, took two ER visits. Finally, a pediatrician figured out her symptoms of facial palsy, joint pain, chronic headache, fatigue, mental health issues, eating issues. She had the blood test, through the state health department, and it was Lyme disease. She had a month-long course of antibiotics and declared free of the bacteria. But here, a couple of years later, she's still suffering with the chronic headache, joint pain, stomach issues, so forth. Is there any hope that she will ever get over these?
Yeah, great question. I mean, I think this is really hitting at something that Dr. John Alcott at Johns Hopkins University has pioneered in terms of trying to put a better finger on. It's something called post-treatment Lyme disease syndrome, PTLDS, and they and other groups have written a lot of articles about this and how to start to treat and manage this better. So I think there is hope is the answer for your caller or your emailer. But we have a lot to learn about those kinds of cases, and those definitely are typically the more complicated ones.
Yeah, and for someone like her, would it help her to maybe take a look at your resources, or where would she go for more?
Yeah, I mean, certainly we can take a look at her story and what's been done so far, and certainly, you know, when the center opens for clinical care, we can take a look at her clinically. But I would reach out to someone if she's still having issues and not sit on those symptoms.
All right. Let's go to Linda in Sheboygan next. Hi, Linda.
Hi. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. I had a tick bite about 3 years ago. Went immediately to our walk-in clinic, and I was given a round of antibiotics, oral antibiotics, just as a precaution. About a week later, I developed the bullseye. So does that mean I had Lyme disease?
Yeah, great question, Linda. What you're describing is a great example of where, you know, the body responds with what it has available. And so your immune system is different from the next person down the road. And so when you were given those antibiotics, the body kind of used those to fight what it saw and use the resources it had at hand. And it may not have been enough to get fully over the bug. In many cases it is, and those are the cases we want to see happen. But when it's not enough, we have to sit down and figure out, well, how much is enough? And, you know, did you just need another week of antibiotics? Did you need other things to support your immune system? So it's a great example of how we still have a lot to learn about how these bugs are affecting us each individually. And they're tricky. They've figured out ways to evade the immune system. And there's different strains, and as we haven't really touched on it much on this session, but there are lots of different bugs that the ticks can carry. It's not just Lyme disease, and you may have been treated for one strain and not another strain of pathogen that the bugs carry.
Oh, there you go. Let's see. Our next caller is Michael in Lodi, I believe. Michael, hi.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I just wanted to state that I had Lyme's disease diagnosed about 15 years ago, and I'm a healthy guy, never been in the hospital or nothing, and I was developing symptoms of, like, night sweats, headaches, fatigue, and the common stuff, and my joints were aching. Well, I didn't know what was going on, so, you know, a couple of weeks of that, I couldn't take it anymore. I went in. And they took about 3 weeks to figure out what was wrong with me. And when I ended up, they diagnosed me, I was in the third stage of Lyme disease at that point. They gave me 2 spinal taps, and which was unnecessary, I believe. But, yeah, that was a very scary time.
But you recovered.
Yes, but I still have symptoms, and I did get that vaccine back then, and what they told me is I always test positive, always.
Yeah.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, I mean, you've again, got a unfortunately, a story that's probably repeated all too often, and I think in some ways you were lucky that it only took 3 weeks to make the diagnosis, because I think there's a lot of folks out there who are suffering without a diagnosis and without treatment, and you know, we need to have better tests and better ways to identify them and better screening.
Christina in Glenwood City will give you a chance now. Hi, Christina.
Hi there. Thank you so much. This is such an important topic. My question, I too had the series of 3 Lyme vaccines, and I'm wondering, would I currently have protection?
Well, that's a great question. Kind of goes back to the immune discussion we had a little earlier, that, you know, really depends on how your body holds on to those. You know, most vaccinations, you know, just to use tetanus as an example, right, you typically get revaccinated every 10 years. I don't know that those long-term studies were done on the Lyme vaccine, but typically that's about the time frame where we talk about boosters and so forth. So I would guess that you don't have protection forever and a day, and certainly from any vaccine, your protection is typically stronger in the early period, in the early years following the vaccination. But yes, you would have some measure of protection longer and longer term. But as we said before, that will decrease over time slowly.
Thank you, Christina. Appreciate it. Matt in Ashland, we go to you next. Hi, Matt.
Hi there. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a family doctor up here, and I guess I haven't heard the whole program, so I apologize, but I'm concerned that the dominant medical consensus and the evidence of that science is, to this point, certainly, like, acknowledges that there's a lot we don't know about Lyme disease, but I'm concerned that your listeners may listen to this program and get the sense that there's strong evidence that this bacteria persists in the body alive even after treatment, and I don't believe there is medical evidence of that, and so I guess I'm concerned that we're sort of leading our listeners astray in giving them sort of health misinformation.
All right. Well, Dr. Kogelnik, comment?
Well, I think certainly there's great evidence around acuteness of the disease, but there have been cases, and I think Dr. Spector's case was one where the pathogen was found pretty late in the course, and there's lots of published articles from Johns Hopkins and other groups talking about persistence, and I agree with you. I think there's a lot to be learned there, but it's clear that the bugs can persist from those articles much longer than we previously thought. So I'm happy to take that debate up with you offline, but I agree. You know, there aren't good protocols in terms of treating those patients and treating, you know, identifying, you know, whether persistence is present in any given individual. But there certainly are patients, as I mentioned already, the studies from Dr. Alcott and others, where there are symptoms that are persisting long after the initial bite, and we need to figure those out. So that's part of what the center is about, is putting data behind all of these kinds of things and hopefully settling some of these controversies. And that's really part of the point of putting a research center in with a clinical center, that we want to be open to all perspectives, but at the end of the day, we want to put some good data behind all these discussions. So I really appreciate your bringing that up, and we want to have that conversation with providers who are on either side of this debate, and it sounds like you're on one of them, and there's certainly other providers who are on another, and I think we're somewhere in the middle. So let's work together and find some answers for the patients that are out there.
And in terms of the research, and thanks, Matt, for calling. In terms of the research, what's the array of research that you'll be doing at the center?
Well, we've started by doing some screening programs, just looking at capturing and starting to measure lots of different parameters beyond just the typical Lyme testing screens or other tick-borne illness screens, and looking at how the body and the immune system respond to different infections, as well as trying to sort of just measure in general the rate of infections that are out there. And the initial screening we did in a little over 200, actually almost 300 people, showed us that actually about 25% of people in a random screen in northern Wisconsin will turn up with a positive for one or more of these illnesses. So that means that they've been exposed or they potentially have still active symptoms, and we've been looking at a little bit more deeply at that. So we'll be doing some more deep dives around those kinds of testing, but also looking at how patients respond as they go through treatment, you know, acute tick bites and so forth, and seeing if we can measure some things around patient response and failure to respond to antibiotics and other things. So those are sort of the first ones on the docket.
Yeah, and with a lot more to come, I expect. And again, can you give us the website that people can go to for more information?
Sure. The website actually should be up by next week, but if you go to the Open Medicine Institute site, it will be at openmedicineinstitute.org/ticks. But it's not quite up yet. We're waiting to get our doors open up before we open the web doors as well.
So, but jot that down and make note of it. And Dr. Kogelek, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I hope we have a chance to maybe down the road here as things develop that you'll come back and be with us again and talk about what's going on at the center and some of your findings.
Happy to. Thanks for making the time. It's such an important issue.
Yeah, thank you so much. Dr. Andy Kogelnick is the director of the Open Medicine Institute and has been working on the establishment of the Tick-Borne Illness Center of Excellence in Woodruff, Wisconsin. Great to have him along, and we'll follow up with him. I gave that number, phone number earlier. It's 715-203-1616. So 715-203-1616. Well, coming up, we're going to be talking about the American Eagle. Since it first appeared on the Great Seal in 1782, it's been used by thousands of artists to represent the U.S. And there's a new book out. It's called American Eagle, A Visual History of Our National Emblem. Preston Cook, the author of that. And we'll talk with him next on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Miller.